Okay, so today I'm with Eva from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and we're going to talk about basically malware and hacking techniques that have been used in and during the Syrian war. So I think in our previous series on InfoSec, we've sort of looked at policy, strategy, operations, tactics in a very sort of general, sort of abstract way as to sort of introduce these concepts, to get InfoSec people talking about things that would be normally reserved for foreign policy, national security topics. And now this would be the first entry in our series where we talk about specific instances where either hackers have attacked states or states have attacked, activists, hackers, what have you. So let's start off with Eva, let's start off with the groups, because I think, recently we saw the sort of the hack against the New York Times and Twitter, and people were talking about the Syrian Electronic Army. They were responsible, or fingers are being pointed towards the group for these attacks. But in the case of Syria, I mean, is it much more complex than just the Syrian Electronic Army? It seems like there's multiple groups operating in this theater.
Yes, there are. If you take a look at what's been happening in the sort of Syrian space, we've been able to identify a number of groups and a number of actors that are taking part in this sort of war of propaganda and sometimes war of intelligence gathering on both sides. So on one hand, probably the best known group is the Syrian Electronic Army, which has existed for a couple of years, a little bit, probably about as long as there has been an opposition to Assad's authoritarian rule since sort of the beginning of the conflict. And the SEA, as far as we can tell, is a group which is fairly amorphous in the sense that just about anyone can declare themselves to be a member of the SEA and start, spouting propaganda at any time. In that sense, it has some similarities to Anonymous in that anyone can sort of name themselves an Anon for the purpose of a particular project, and that talking about Anonymous as a group is in some ways very problematic. And in that same way, it can be a little bit difficult to talk about SEA as a single entity. Basically, as far as we can tell, the SEA seems to be comprised of a couple of relatively technically skilled actors and a lot of hangers-on. And for the most part, the SEA engages in what we call website defacements. So they will find a website that's not particularly well protected, that hasn't protected its, admin page. And they will put up content that is in favor of the Assad regime, or that is not in favor of the opposition. And sometimes it's a very obvious defacement, just like a giant Syrian flag. And sometimes it's a little bit more subtle, and they will place fake stories, which I recall they did in a couple of newspaper site defacements. So that's usually what happens there. In the case of the most recent of the most recent SEA hack, and I kind of hesitate to call it a hack because it was more of an attempted defacement or hijacking, which was aimed at Twitter and also the Huffington Post and the New York Times. What happened was that the Syrian Electronic Army, or some actor from the Syrian Electronic Army, managed to hijack DNS through Melbourne IT. And so that was a fairly big deal, but it did not require a great deal of technical sophistication. As far as we know, this was done by spearfishing the people over at Melbourne IT. You send out an email purporting to be from, somebody that they find important, and say, if you could just give me your admin password for this thing, I would really appreciate it. And that's generally the SEA's MO. Then we have a couple of different actors that we have a couple of different actors that engage in malware campaigns. We have what we refer to as the .28 gang, because all of their material is exfiltrated to the same IP ending in .28. In fact, the CNC is so well known that the very first story about Syrian malware targeting opposition members actually included the IP address of the CNC, which is something that you don't see very often in you know, kind of journalism. It's certainly the first time I'd ever seen something like that on, I think it was CNN. Usually they lead the IP out. So we have this gang, and usually they engage in phishing by breaking into sort of third-party websites that are not particularly well-protected, and then using them to host a phishing page, which is disguised as a fake YouTube page or a fake Facebook login page, and that way they phish your login credentials. They may also covertly install malware on your machine. For the most part, we've seen a lot of free and cheap European-based remote access tools being used for this purpose, like Blackshades Rat and Extreme Rat. I think the person who ran Blackshades Rat, who's a French guy, was so disturbed to find that his remote access tool had essentially become synonymous with spying on Syrian activists and possibly sending security forces to their house and having them tortured and killed, that he put a stop to the project. There is still malware out there that runs Blackshades. Because just because you put a stop to your project doesn't mean that your software suddenly doesn't work anymore. But it's, you know, sort of an indication that that this guy had a bit of a conscience about what was going on.
I mean, could we sort of talk about what seems to be the goal of the SCA versus these other groups? I mean, the SCA seems to be, I mean, I think a lot of people on Twitter, you know, this week have sort of derided them as, you know, attention seeking or kiddies, or, you know, they really want the camera to sort of focus on them. But it seems with these other groups, they're very much focused on collecting intelligence. So,
yes.
I mean,
These are two groups with two very different goals, which is one of the reasons why I think there is not necessarily a lot of evidence pointing to there being the same actor. Among the Syrians, from what I've been able to tell, and given that I don't read Arabic, this is my knowledge of what Syrians are saying to each other is somewhat skewed. There is a widespread opinion that this is all the Syrian Electronic Army. But I think that the technical evidence doesn't really bear that out. Keep in mind that a lot of the time attribution is hard. You know, real attribution is hard. And attribution is hard even with groups that don't go through any trouble to really hide who they are. After all, both the SCA and these two malware groups appear to be based out of Syria. So trying to hide their identity beyond that is really kind of pointless, because what's Facebook or Google or the Huffington Post or the New York Times going to do? Show up at their house and give them an angry speech? You know, are they going to, you know, send them to court? Are they going to be prosecuted for violating the CFAA? Not going to happen. Generally, if you're living in Syria, you have bigger problems right now, and you're largely outside of the reach of U.S. government actors, unless, of course, you count the people who may or may not be bombing Syria this week. But even then, I think that the SCA and these actors that are spreading malware, probably not very high on their list of targets.
So I'm sort of curious, I mean, has this intelligence collection, I mean, we've seen sort of what the SCA would consider success, but I mean, on the other side of it, I mean, has these groups that don't want attention and sort of their goals are intelligence collection, have they been successful? I mean, have they been able to sort of penetrate the network and computers of activists and sort of the opposition groups?
Well, we do know that these rats have been downloaded by at least some members of the Syrian opposition, and that, you know, some penetration has happened. But by their very nature, it's very hard to count rats and to count penetration. So we don't know. I can tell you that that the kind of fishing that these groups do is remarkably successful, and that the kind of bait that they use is really designed to pull on the heartstrings. These are usually, you know, here is some video of Assad's dogs raping little girls, or something else which really gets people worked up. Or here are some documents about, you know, how we're going to protect Aleppo in the face of a siege. Or here are some documents about how we're going to, you know, be rebuilding the government and how it's going to be structured after, you know, after the revolution. These are all very, very interesting documents to people who are interested in opposing Assad. And so they make extremely effective bait.
Interesting. So, I mean, let's sort of, you know, get a little deeper into sort of the malware being used. You know, for the audience, we'll post these series of articles and papers when we publish the episode. But you know, reading through your blog posts at EFF and some of the longer papers, I mean, Dark Comet comes up a lot. So, I mean, explain to the audience, I mean, you know, what is Dark Comet and sort of, you know, what is a sort of remote access Trojan?
All right.
And how it's being used.
Well, I think I mentioned Dark Comet earlier. Dark Comet is the remote access tool that was written by a hacker in France. It occurs to me that I might have improperly identified it as Black Shades earlier in my discussion. It's very easy to sort of get all of these tools mixed up because they have all have equally spooky names. But Dark Comet is a remote access tool. It allows a person running the tool to monitor keystrokes, to monitor screens, to take occasional screenshots, to monitor the microphone of a target infected computer. And in that way, they can effectively circumvent any kind of encryption that the user may be employing in order to mask their identity. Furthermore, every time that the user enters a password into their computer, it is recorded by the rat. So it records all of your keystrokes, and in that way, they can infiltrate all of your accounts, including including your email account or your Skype account. So it's all very, very dangerous. The difference between these sort of everyday cheap to free remote access tools and the remote access tools that are built by, you know, multi-million-dollar companies based out of Europe, like Gamma International, is not necessarily what they're capable of, but the extent to which the company provides tech support, or the extent to which all of this stuff is, reliable and follows European evidentiary standards, so that you can use it in a court of law. That's really what you're getting for your extra hundreds of thousands of dollars, not necessarily greater functionality. In the end, if you have root on somebody's box, you have root on their box, and you can do whatever you want. And the only difference is how easy it is to do these things.
I mean, is there any theses or sort of explanations how Dark Comet, how this program specifically came to, you know, come into the Syrian theater and or Syrian space or whatever you want to call it? I mean, it seems like this is it's a very specific program with a, you know, sort of very specific use. So, I mean, what's the thesis or what's the argument for it sort of coming to be used in Syria? Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, we have some theories, none of which we can really confirm without talking to talking to the people responsible for writing this malware. But the kind of tools that they're using seem to be cheap, off the shelf, easy to use, and also very easy to package with their phishing emails or documents or websites. And this indicates a sort of lack of technical sophistication on the part of their hackers. They're not reading really anything particularly complicated. They're essentially using a GUI in order to construct this malware.
So, you know, what sort of, you know, what have been the targets? I mean, you mentioned Skype, but, you know, you mentioned Skype and PDFs, but, you know, beyond that, how has it been spread? I mean, is it really just a matter of sort of sending an email, having somebody click a link, put in their credentials, or, I mean, is there a sort of, oh, go ahead.
In a number of different ways. The first is definitely through Skype messages. You will get a Skype message from somebody purporting to be your friend saying, you know, hey, click on this link or download this document. Messages on Facebook doing more or less the same thing, or posts to Facebook walls of accounts which are considered to be, you know, sort of opposed to the regime. We've seen a lot of that. I think one of them was seeded through a hacked Facebook account belonging to a sort of senior official in the opposition. So that sort of thing happens a lot. And also emails which are spread encouraging people to go to websites, phishing websites, or to open up PDFs or Word documents. But in the end, all of the rats are always installed because somebody clicks on something. You click on something, you download something, you read a document, you enter your login credentials someplace where you shouldn't. There's always an element of interactivity, and that is what makes it that is the leverage that we can use in order to stop the malware from spreading. Because the more you educate people that this sort of malware exists, the less likely they are to actually engage in the interactivity that you need in order to covertly install it on people's machines.
So, I mean, what do we know about the back end of this, of these groups? I mean, is it, you know, what do we know about the servers? You know, who's hosting, you know, these sites? Who's, you know, where the servers are, the IP addresses? I mean, are all of these attacks coming from Syria, or is there sort of, you know, a lot of sort of obfuscation and sort of attempts at being anonymous?
There's almost no obfuscation. Hackers are rarely more elaborate than they need to be. We're lazy people. And if seeing as many of these hackers are located inside of Syria and outside of the reach of the kind of authorities whose laws they are breaking by breaking into these machines, they gain nothing by obfuscating their identities. And indeed, the SCA usually engages in these, you know, extremely public defacements. So taking credit is extremely important. Pretending to come from somewhere else is beside the point. In the case of the two gangs we've seen that are running these extended malware campaigns, they're not really going through a great deal of trouble to obfuscate their origin either. They are all located in Syrian IP space.
So, I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, why not just sort of attack and take down these servers? Is there, you know, a sort of tension between trying to learn about these groups and trying to stop these attacks, or is there just no intention of going out and sort of, you know, taking the next step from research to attack?
Well, if someone were to attack these servers, I think it is very likely that the malware gangs would just spin up another server. You know, servers are not terribly hard to get. It's playing whack-a-mole. So in some ways, it's simply not worth the trouble. And indeed, even if some of these malware gangs could be intimidated into stopping, they would probably just be replaced by more people doing the same thing.
So I want to sort of switch our conversation a little to how can people protect themselves? Because, I mean, is it really a matter of education and sort of don't click on wonky links, or, you know, do activists and members of the opposition have to sort of take the next step and sort of not only develop situational awareness, but even to a degree, technical awareness?
Well, for the most part, education is key. And you can see that members of the Syrian opposition have gone through a great deal of trouble to educate themselves. There was a Facebook group last year, which was comprised almost entirely of people holding up little signs saying, you know, don't click on strange links, don't enter your password into, you know, into strange websites, because the Syrian or because the Assad regime is targeting opposition members. And when you do this, you endanger not only yourself, but your entire network of trust. So I think that the Syrian opposition actually understands this very well. And I would hope that some of this is because of the work that EFF and Citizen Lab have done on this subject, and also the work that that Cyber Arabs has done, but not necessarily so. These guys are smart, and they're highly, highly motivated.
So, I mean, for our last sort of point, I mean, how can the hacker community and the InfoSec community sort of help out with EFF's project, with sort of developing a deeper sense of knowledge and, you know, about the malware being used?
Well, there are a couple of things that you can do. The first thing that I do is I always encourage people to join EFF, and you can do that at www.eff.org. We have a button right at the top for donations and for memberships. Your membership is immensely helpful. We also have a blog called Deep Links, which covers the whole range of EFF issues if you'd like to keep informed about this sort of thing. And if you are a reverser, or if you have, you know, sort of a specialty in forensic analysis, there is one more step that you can take, which is to contact me directly. I am eva@eff.org. I have the world's easiest email address. And I maintain a list of sort of cooperating reversers and forensic analysts, so that when terrified journalists or activists send us malware, or are worried that their machines have been infected with malware, we have people who can perform an analysis, and sometimes we can do something about it afterwards.
So, you know, before we end the interview, we always like to ask the guest, you know, did we leave anything out? Last comments, you know, whatever the guest, you know, the guest always has the last word.
Well, one particularly interesting thing that's been happening in Syria right now is actually that the number of malware attacks and the extended malware campaigns has been going down. And there is a lot of competing theories about exactly why this is happening. One of them is that it is becoming less and less useful to the Assad regime to have this kind of intelligence. But the other is that the SCA simply doesn't approve of this tactic, and therefore has gotten the malware gangs to back down. I think that the former is more likely than the latter. But this means that the kind of malware that we're looking at right now is not necessarily Syrian malware. This is a problem that extends well beyond Syria. We have helped to find malware in places as distant as Ethiopia and Bahrain and Morocco. So even if this is not the most important thing which is going on right now in the area of malware targeting journalists and activists, there's absolutely more to do, and we need all the help we can get.
Thank you so much. Before we end, just make sure to check out EFF. Before, you know, when we publish the interview, we will have links to Eva's work, and so you'll be able to read the research in more detail. We will also post, there's a website that hosts, if you're a reverser, if, you know, you're into reverse engineering, your forensics or whatever, we will also have a link to SyrianMalware.com, where they have basically malware samples and binaries for you to examine. And then also we will make sure to put up Eva's Twitter, a link to her Twitter account and email, so you could contact her if you're interested in sort of engaging on the technical side of this, you know, research. So thank you so much for coming on, Eva.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay.